Go ahead. Poke the Blair. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
You're asking yourself, why are we playing Tragically Hip on the Jeff Blair Show? Well, the reason we're playing Tragically Hip is they're going to be on Wednesday taking part in the NHL, the big NHL shindig down at Young and Dundas. And apparently they're going to be doing their sound check right during the Blair Show. That's what I've been told. So maybe we'll be able to grab one of them and come over and do a stint. All of us will be down at Young and Dundas Wednesday. Brady and Walker will be down there bright and early. I'll be taking over. Tim and Stitt will be down there. Hockey Central, of course, the man himself, Mr. Robert McCowan, will be down there. And then we'll have the first game of the Leafs 2014-2015 season from the Air Canada Center against the Montreal Canadiens. But before the Leafs take to the ice for that game, they've got one more preseason game tonight against the Detroit Red Wings at the Air Canada Center. That game will be on Sportsnet 1, and we will, of course, have it on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Gord Stellick, is co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game and Hockey Nation of Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And Mr. Stellick joins us. Gord, did you and Osborne need to go away to Collingwood for some bonding?
I think Ozzy would win paintball, that's for sure. You know, it's funny, they did that back in the late 80s. A guy named Mark Rich up in Blue Mountain's been there forever, and he was a guy that, you know, helped tee things up. So, boy, it can get pretty monotonous and tedious at training camp. I thought it was a pretty good idea because they just had game after game after game after game, and you're down to your core now. And, I mean, team bonding gets a little, I don't know, everyone needs a term for everything. Mm-hmm. I just think you're just kind of bored out of your whatever, and it's not a bad idea to do something different.
No, I mean, I had a little bit of fun with it the other day, but I mean, the Montreal Canadiens were going away to, for years, going up to Mont-Tremblant during the playoffs or just getting away. And yeah, I mean, I think you know what it does? It breaks up the routine, and anything that breaks up a routine that's going to be part of your life for the next 8 months or however long it is. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I have no problem with it. I would love, I mean, we've got referee cams now on our Rogers Sportsnet game. You heard about that, eh? The Rogers NHL package. We've got referee cams now. I was thinking we should have paintball cams. We should have paintball cams on Randy Carlyle, so we can get an inside look at what paintball war is like between the Leafs players.
Really, you know, two things. I guess you can find out really who has each other's back in this, you know, pseudo military exercise. And then, I mean, if they wouldn't help Randy Carlyle with a toaster in 24/7, like who's going to help him load his rifle up and all that stuff? I mean, that's going to be anyway.
There you go. Well, we got hockey. We've got hockey night. What is Randy Carlyle and his coaching staff need to see tonight? I mean, obviously, Josh Levo, there are some guys who are, you know, I think, frankly, got one foot in the team right now. Brandon Cozen, Josh Levo, maybe Daniel Winnick. What do they need? What does Randy and his staff need to see tonight, do you think?
Well, you know, it's funny. The personnel, the guys you mentioned, I mean, that process is going to continue early in the season. Guys like Daniel Winnick, I know David Booth is hurt now. But, you know, those kind of guys that came over on the one-year type deals, I mean, they're part of it, and they're going to be spotted in and out at the start of the season. I think Randy Carlyle, overall, first of all, please no more injuries, because that's the one thing you try to avoid in preseason. But I think, Jeff, tonight is not a run-of-the-mill, mundane preseason game in that you've had a break, it's the Red Wings, and you want to get a bit of a tune-up. I mean, you mm-hmm. want to get a bit of a tune-up. You want to get a bit of, you know, spark, a bit of chemistry, a bit of cohesiveness, a bit of things that you hope are there when the puck drops next Wednesday. So I think, you know, more along the lines, it's those kinds of things. You still have time to make decisions on personnel, and even with guys that go to the Toronto Marlies, they can be called up the next day, whatever. I don't think there's as many of those compelling do-or-die type games in a preseason tryout type situation.
Should Leafs fans look at this team right now and go, eh?
Yeah. They should based on, and this is where the team has to give a reason why they shouldn't. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, why you go, eh, or whatever noise or whatever, if you want to swear, whatever.
It was kind of like a meh, but like,
well,
eh.
You know, okay, you know why you wouldn't go, eh, would be last year, the you know, it's funny. I'm watching the baseball games, and I'm saying where I thought the Leafs had jumped the shark, cleared the hurdle, was they had better ways of stopping the bleeding. So within games, you know, as you see, like last night, the Tigers, you know, couldn't get that out, whatever. So the Orioles have the big inning, and that quite often happens. And same for the Leafs. In games, it happened. And then it happened on that losing streak that they couldn't stop the bleeding. And the Red Wings had two of those big wins, you know, and they had a Gustav Nyquist who came up and was the guy in one of those wins against the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, these were games that if the Leafs had just won one of them, arguably they could have stopped the bleeding on that slide and still made the playoffs, but they just couldn't find a way to do it. And the Red Wings, who are still, you know, they set the bar as far as organizations overall. I mean, the Leafs have to find guys that can play like Gustav Nyquist did in that game, that different guys come up with big games, provide a spark, all that kind of thing, so they stop the bleeding in games they should win, and they stop the bleeding on prolonged losing streaks, which obviously they couldn't do last year.
I guess a lot of us will be looking forward to seeing what Stefan Robida brings, pardon me, what he brings to the table, paired with Dion Phaneuf. My sense is from what I've seen early from Dion Phaneuf, he certainly seems to really like being shifted back to the other side. I get the sense the guy might be a little more comfortable this year. I don't know if maybe having Roman Pollock around along with Robida has maybe made a difference already, but my sense is he's more comfortable, Gord.
I agree, and I give Dion credit that he didn't, you know, he never made that as an excuse last year, guys playing on their offside, and I'm, you know, whether he chooses to keep the kids together this year or not, we really haven't had a semblance of defensive pairs for a while, mm-hmm. and I know teams, by and large, do move things around that way, but you would like to get that kind of thing where guys have a cohesiveness with somebody else up there, and I think that was an astute move by Dave Nonis about changing the chemistry, the mix of the D, but also getting more right-handed shots and not just being Cody Franson, because that was problematic. And, you know, getting the puck out of the zone, all those other little things that if you get guys playing their correct side, that's going to help. And I think with Phaneuf as well, I agree with you. I think he could be the guy it most significantly helps.
Gord Stellick joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Gord is co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game and Hockey Nation Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll have tonight's game between the Leafs and the Red Wings from the Air Canada Centre. Puck drop is at 7:30, and you can watch the game as well on Sportsnet 1. I think most people are in agreement about William Nylander, that he's not ready for the NHL yet. What is your sense, Gord, as to what the Leafs should do with him? I think we had this discussion before. Are we in the same page that he should be back in Sweden and just almost out of sight, out of mind?
No, okay. I believe you should go to the Toronto Marlies. I really do. I think that it's not so much that you're, it just happens to be the American Hockey League team that happens to be in Toronto. So I'm not, you know, if it was in Binghamton, New York or wherever it was, that's where he should go. I just think, Jeff, that, hey, he's done all he can over there. He has. He's thrived. He became a high first round pick. He's a skilled player. That's not going to change. And I just think the rigors of an 82 game schedule, more the North American style, that, you know, get a jump on it for a year. I'd rather have him doing it here. And I just think that would be a better growth year than going back over there. I'm not sure which way they're thinking, but my opinion, I'd have him with the Toronto Marlies.
Yeah, I guess in some ways, you know, I mean, I was sitting here sort of basing it on the whole, well, if the Leafs got off to a slow start, you know, this kid's literally just going to be down the road, and you know, Randy's going to be asked about this, and Donis is going to be asked about it, and the kids are going to be asked about it. But, you know, as you're answering the question, I'm just thinking to myself, essentially what I've said is I'm letting potential media pressure dictate what I'm going to do with a highly talented offensive player. That may not be the right way to do it.
Well, you know, and the media pressure is the media pressure. It's why they're like the wealthiest hockey team. I was saying Forbes valued them that, so that's why I'm saying the magazine thing. I mean, that's why they have such great value, is because of the media pressure. But media pressure, Jeff, it's what the team does with it. And, you know, it's funny, just as you talk about that, a couple of years ago, and, you know, Brian Burke was a guy that claimed he didn't feel the media pressure, but I can remember they were going to Florida, play both teams, And there was no way. It was absolutely game, set, match. Nazem Kadri was going to come up again. Then they stunk the joint out in either Tampa Bay or Florida, and they went on to the next city. Yeah, guess who's called up again? Nazem Kadri. Well, you know, that's where you've got to stick to your guns as a team. You got to stick to your guns through thick and thin. And if, you know, I just find so often it becomes desperate measures that you get caught in it and you wallow in it, and the glimmer of hope is your high first-round pick. And I'm with you that way. If it's going to be like Nazem Kadri up three or four times before he was really ready, then I'd send him Timbuktu or get him out of sight. Mm-hmm. But I still think best for the Marlies and stay the course with whatever your plan is. Don't make a knee-jerk reaction based on your record when it comes to Nylander.
And that's really one thing we need to figure out about where Brendan Shanahan and I guess Kyle Dubas to a certain degree. We need to get a sense of what their approach is going to be with good young players, don't we? Because we've had this criticism of the organization for a while that they bring guys up, send them down, bring them up, send them down. And everybody pays lip service to, well, we're going to send a guy down. We've got a plan for him. He's going to have to do this. He's going to have to reach this level and reach this level, and then we'll bring him up. And then an injury or two later, it's, well, we need to bring the guy up right away. We'll get a sense, I think, of just how patient this kind of reworked management group will be when we see what they do with William Nylander.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's got to be whether you talk baseball in the Gillick days or whatever days, and just about, you know, when he was Stan Pat and he took the criticism for 3 years, and then holy crap, he made trades, he signed free agents, he did whatever it took to get over the hump. And you look back at the litany of, okay, blown first round picks, poorly traded first round picks, first-round picks that didn't develop here, develop somewhere else. I mean, it goes on and on and on. I mean, it's like a 30-year thing about whether even Luke Shen's the latest guy. Mm-hmm. Now, James Van Riemsdyk's a pretty nice price to get back for him, but I just mean more. When you draft a first-round pick, you're always envisioning that guy, you know, being your Drew Doughty or somebody or whatever it may be, and instead you've got Steen and Rask playing elsewhere, and, you know, Kadri still trying to figure out if he's our version of something close to a P.K. Subban in Toronto. I mean, on and on and on. And Luca Chiarelli, you know, whatever, guys that just didn't work out. And this is a big reason why you've gone this long not making playoffs, is not having a plan. So whatever plan they have, they got to stick to it. The only problem is for Leaf fans, and unfortunately, it's year one of the plan, and it's not like year 10.
Mm. Gorge Delek joins us in the Jeff Blair Show. After a little bit of experimenting with the top two lines, I think Randy Carlisle and the coaching staff kind of looked at Van Riemsdyk, Bozak, and Kessel and said, you know what, we got an awful lot of other concerns here. Let's leave these guys where they are and maybe focus on the bottom six. What do you feel about the importance of having a set first line? Is it that big a deal to have a set first? I mean, you look at the Chicago Blackhawks, they're moving guys around all the time. Now, I know the talent level's different, but they move guys around off their first and second line. They move some guys up, they move some guys down, depending on the situation. Is it that big a deal, Gord, that the first line stay together?
I don't think so. I like having the pairs, and we've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. That I think there's the kind of thing that you look at maybe two guys that have a unique chemistry, and you play off that to help get everybody going, you know, so you can get... I mentioned earlier that Joffrey Leupold, to me, is a guy, he was on the second line, and it really didn't sit well with him last year, and I'm not saying he was whiny or mopey or whatever, but you got to figure a way that somehow gets the most out of him so you can get two lines going. So, I mean, last year, very quickly, this team became a team that only won games via excellent goaltending or the big line having a great offensive game. There were no other ways. Where in the lockout shortened season, they seemed to have like 7-8 different ways they won games, and they got to get back to it. So I'm cool with the line being together right now, but I'm also cool with throwing other guys in there, whether you take, you know, Bozak out or somebody out for time to time to try to get two lines going in a big way. You've got to have two offensive lines, and they didn't last year. So he tried it in training camp, in exhibition game, preseason games, which is what you should do. But I think, you know, go back with what you know, at least for the start, and go from there.
The acquisition in the offseason that I think interested most people was Leo Komarov's acquisition. I think just about anybody who watched the Leafs would tell you that if a player was missed last year from the year before, in a lot of ways, it was Komarov. What is he a different player than when he was last year?
Hopefully not. You know, it looks like he's not either. I mean that as a positive. That,
yes.
You know, it's funny. I like to use comparables, and I always remember the Raptor team when they were going pretty good, and they had remember the guy Garbajosa? you know, just the greasy, oily yep. guy that did everything. I mean, he just did stuff that didn't show up statistically, and then he got hurt. You know, playing an international tournament was never the same. But and they missed that. You know, they missed that little X element that doesn't that you really can't quantify. But guys in the dressing room and on the court in that case, or on the ice in this case, really value and realize. And I'm not going to award him the Hart Trophy for being away last year. It seemed like that at times, how much they missed him, but that sort of went with losing. But I love that guy. I love the guy, the fact that he's really respected and loved by his teammates. And it was a guy they definitely missed. Matt Fratton, that's a different one. You know, he mm-hmm. never really had his fit yet. He's a skilled guy, and we'll see where that goes. But Komarov was part of the fiber of that team that had a little bit of success, and I thought that was great getting him back.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, I know we have spoken about this, but one of the things Komarov really brought to the table as well was that ability to be tough and play with an edge within the confines of the rules, mainly because of his size and his use of his body. But I mean, he was, you know, there were games against Boston. Well, you remember that series. He was a load. There were games against Boston in the playoffs in that series where he was overmatching some guys. Now, it didn't always lead to goals, but he was overmatching some guys down low.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And it's funny, like, you know, you look back and I don't miss Clark MacArthur from a Leaf point of view. Mm-hmm. That was a great signing by Ottawa. Don't get me wrong. That was a nice signing for Ottawa. But what the Leafs needed was more like a Komarov style when you're talking about spending money. And the Boston series, the team looked different. It almost gets a little bit contagious and infectious when you got guys playing that way. I mean, more mainstream North America guys would be the Darcy Tuckers and the Gary Roberts and the Wendell Clarks, you know, that we got used to with the Leafs as well. And Komarov does elements of that as well, that it's really an ingredient you need, and then when things start going your way, it gets a little bit contagious.
Gord, it was good of you to do this morning, as always. I'll look forward to your work tonight.
Well, 7 o'clock, we've got the pregame show, like you say, and then Ozzy and I, we start the Hockey Nation show, starts tomorrow from 5 to 7. So I know we got a lot of playoff baseball and very entertaining playoff baseball going, but we got hockey, and I love it.
Yeah, it's going to be great, and we're only, what, 5 days? Five, count them, days.
Not too difficult to remember when every time you turn around the Rogers Building, that number looms at you.
I think we're all looking forward to it. It's I think there's a lot of exciting things going on, and I think everybody's just kind of itching to see what it's gonna look like, what it's gonna sound like, and what it's gonna feel like.
I'm more excited that it's 7 days, I believe, till I'm on your show next.
That's right, because it's once every week. There you
all
go,
right.
Sir. We'll have a count. Well, you know what we'll do? We'll have a countdown clock set up in the Stellick household, so you know exactly when you're coming on with us. Travis will come over.
The Phil Donahue countdown calendar. We'll have it in my place. Sounds good.
That's right. Take care, Gord. Have a good weekend. That's Gord Stellick. He is co-host of our Leafs Nation pre and post game and Hockey Nation on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. It's going to be a real treat. Guys, seriously, like there are a few NFL analysts frankly, there are a few of them that are crap. There are a lot of them. There are a couple of them, I should say, who are pretty good. A couple of them who not only are good at expressing opinions, but back it up. Boomer Esiason of the NFL and CBS, and of course is also co-host of Boomer and Carton and WFAN in New York. He's one of them. You can follow him on Twitter at 7Boomer Esiason, and you can hear him here next. Boomer Esiason joins us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of the Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, don't forget, we'll have all four MLB playoff games for you today. Starting with Detroit and Baltimore, all of them in Sportsnet Ontario. It's like 14 hours worth of baseball. I'm going to have my picks for the National League up on sportsnet.ca. They may already be up there, though, given my early lack of success in the American League. I'm not entirely certain I should even bother posting them. I know Kevin Barker is quite thrilled with his with the early returns in his ALDS picks. So Kevin Barker will join me for Baseball Central at noon. And fittingly, it's going to be at noon. Big weekend of football in the NFL, and the game that a lot of us will be watching with extreme interest involves the Cincinnati Bengals and the New England Patriots, two teams that appear to be going in different directions. The Bengals look awfully good on both sides of the ball. The Patriots, you know, I think there's a... It's always a concern when you're dealing with a franchise, a team that has been kind of part of the postseason furniture for a long time. There's always a concern in making a pronouncement that the end is nigh, or we're seeing, you know, the beginning of a deterioration. But it really does seem that in the very least, Bill Belichick is searching for answers. Normally he comes up with them. I don't know if he's found them yet. I think a lot of the things that ail the Patriots are fixable. But at the same time, I look at the Bengals, look at the way they play, look at the development of Andy Dalton, and I'm wondering if maybe, just maybe, we're not seeing a little bit of the changing of the guard here in the NFL. Boomer Esiason, of course, is an analyst on the NFL and CBS. He took the 1988 Bengals to the Super Bowl, and Boomer Esiason joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Boomer, thanks so much for doing this morning.
Hey, my pleasure, Jeff. You know, I really don't care about this game on Sunday night. The only thing I care about is October 12th, Sunday night down here in New York.
Why don't you care about that? This is the Bengals. Is this the best Bengals team since that 88 squad?
Jeff, do you know what's happening down here? It's October 12th, a Sunday night in New York. Do you have any idea of
what's happening?
It's the New York Ranger home opener against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we're going to beat you guys down again.
Well, I mean, there's a pretty good chance of that.
Yeah, I know there is. So I just wanted to get that off my chest. Now, to get back to the Bengals, this is a very good football team. This really is the real deal, and Andy Dalton is the real deal. He got a lot of criticism over the offseason, Jeff, because he didn't win, you know, the playoff game against the San Diego Chargers last year. He's done something no other Bengal quarterback has ever done, including yours truly, Carson Palmer, Kenny Anderson, you name them. There's a long list of us. He's taken his team to the playoffs the last 3 years. He's done it his first 3 years, and his numbers have gotten better each and every year. And he did something this year for the first time that he hadn't done the previous 3 years, and that's win a road game in Baltimore to open the season. So he is on the right target. He's confident. The team is confident. They got a bunch of really good, solid young players, a good offensive line. If Tom Brady had his offensive group of guys around Tom Brady would be doing exactly what Andy Dalton and Peyton Manning are doing. You know, the reason that the Patriots are where they are right now is because you look at the offensive players around Tom Brady, and you're asking a 37-year-old quarterback to do a lot of heavy lifting and to do some extra things that he has not had to do in past years. You're asking for problems, and that's where these two teams are right now. And I do think that Cincinnati, you know, senses blood in the water, just like every other team who's playing the Patriots senses and wants to make sure that they go in there and leave a mark. And I do think that Cincinnati will play very, very well Sunday night.
Boomer, is the problem with the Patriots essentially that when you look at the offense, and we talk about, first of all, getting rid of Logan Mankins, you know, whatever, you know, however much his game had deteriorated, whatever. I mean, I think people will agree that he was probably he filled a pretty good leadership role in that team. But I look at their drafts, and in the past five drafts, they picked 20 players in the top three rounds. One of them has been an offensive lineman. Two have been wideouts. Is the problem with the Patriots at the end of the day, Boomer, that they just don't have enough talented players? They don't have playmakers?
Well, you know, their running back situation is fine. I don't have any problem with their running back situation. Good guys. They have a just four or five different guys that could do so many different things. And Bill Belichick, for years, with Tom Brady as his quarterback, has always utilized those guys and the tight ends in different ways, you know, to manufacture points and you know, big plays down the field. Now, they traded Logan Mankins for this kid, Tim Wright, who is a second-year tight end. They're trying to fill the void left by Aaron Hernandez, who's in jail and dealing with all that nonsense. So you basically have a young guy trying to figure out a new system and a new way of doing things in Tim Wright. You have two wide receivers, Tompkins and Dobson, who have been more injured and you know, unfulfilling than they were led, or actually we all thought they were going to be. And then you have an offensive line who was exposed on the road in Kansas City against a very good pass-rushing Kansas City Chiefs team. And when you don't have a guy like Logan Mankins, a grinder in the middle there, to take the pressure off of a rookie center, to help his right tackle, to communicate in a very nasty environment because he's used to doing it, you're going to have problems. And I think those are the things that you're seeing with the Patriots. If I were Tom Brady, I'd be upset. Now, I can't speak for Tom, but mm-hmm. I can certainly see through my eyes just exactly the lack of support that he's receiving. I mean, when you look at some of these other quarterbacks around the league and you see the players that they're playing with, so their own ability can rise to the top, and then you can utilize the explosiveness of those players like Aaron Rodgers did last night, like Peyton Manning has done, like Drew Brees has done. That's why they continue to put up the real quality numbers. But when you look at what Tom Brady's dealing with, nobody has done more with less than Tom Brady has the last 3 years. And I guess I could sue the New England Patriots for lack of support, for God's sake. he's taken a pay cut to play there. He's not making the money that he probably should be making. He's not stealing every dollar from Bob Kraft and the New England Patriots so they can go out and get other players. And right now, I think that support for him is lacking. And not him in a sense of his own personal ability. I just think the players around him are average at best.
Boomer Esiason joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Boomer, in your neck of the woods in New York, big controversy, Geno Smith and Michael Vick. But if I'm the Jets, I think the quarterback I'd be worried about this weekend is Philip Rivers.
Yeah, well, I would be too, and I know that they are. You know, a quarterback controversy in New York is like a goalie controversy in Toronto. It's a big deal.
It is, yeah.
You guys always have one there, so and hopefully that will continue up there because we need to see more of that. But here in New York, Geno Smith has been under fire. I've walked a mile in this man's shoes. I've played for the Jets under kind of similar situations where you get off to a bad start and the fans all of a sudden start screaming your name. And, you know, he's a young man. He hasn't really gone through this stuff, and he's learning on the fly. I think he'll play well this week. He'll be away from his fan base. They'll be out in San Diego. It'll be a beautiful day out there, nice sunny day. San Diego doesn't run the ball effectively. So Philip Rivers has been really good. He's putting forth an MVP-type performance. But, you know, if you can just get a tip ball or a key interception, you're going to get yourself a chance to win the football game in the fourth quarter. So I expect this game to be closer than many people think, and I think that the Jets will have a chance to win it in the fourth quarter simply because their defense will be good enough to keep them in it.
What does Geno have to do right now? You know, I mean, he's said some things. Is it that simple? He's got to mature.
He's got to mature. He's got to grow up. He's going through everything that we all have gone through who have ever played the position. You know, there's a lot of craziness that goes on, and only if you play the position can you truly appreciate the difficulties that Geno's going through right now. The fan base is screaming for his head. You know, you got a very powerful personality as his backup quarterback in Mike Vick. You have a defensive head coach who basically allows the offense to do whatever they want. I mean, and you have a very loud press corps that mm-hmm. loves nothing better than to stir up a quarterback controversy because that's what the fans are talking about. And just like a goalie controversy in Toronto, this thing just, you know, dominates the back pages, dominates all the inside articles. And really what he has to do, he has to kind of turn it off. I know it sounds easy, but it's not. And go out and play a football game and play with some anger and come out of there with a win somehow. If he can lead his team to a win this weekend, you know, it will subside somewhat. And then next week they got another challenge because they play the Denver Broncos. So they are in the midst of a run here that no other team in the NFL, I think, is dealing with. And that's why this game is so important for him.
Is this a good time, Boomer, for Alex Smith to be going back to San Fran?
You know what? I think I would have much rather had him go back the first week of the season. Mm-hmm. If they were still a little bit of a kind of a team that was like still trying to find itself, the 49ers, that is. I think they found themselves last week, regardless of what Deion Sanders says about Jim Harbaugh and the locker room and all that nonsense. I could care less. Winning cures all of that. And last week I saw the 49er defense that we saw the last three or four years. They shut down maybe the best and most dynamic offense in all of football with the Philadelphia Eagles. I would think that they'll be able to do the same thing with Alex Smith. They have to stop Jamal Charles and Miles Davis. If they stop those two guys and put all the pressure on Alex Smith, you know, you can see a couple turnovers there. But I know that Alex Smith is looking at this game like this is his Super Bowl, and I know that he wants to prove a point here.
Boomer, when a team like the Buffalo Bills benches a young quarterback, E.J. Manuel goes with Kyle Orton instead, what has to happen in that locker room for that change to be a success? I mean, never, you know.
That's a very good question. I'm going to tell you what happens.
Okay.
They can see it on the field of play. They can sense whether or not the guy is making the right calls at the line of scrimmage. Is he getting the formations in? Are the personnel groups that he has on the field with him and the audibles that he's making at the line of scrimmage, do they coincide in the playbook? Is he making mistakes? Is he accurate with the football? Is he throwing the ball behind guys, at the feet of guys? Is he throwing interceptions, you know, in the midst of a screen that end up getting picked off by a defensive lineman in return for a touchdown? All of those things lead to grumbling by the other players, you know. And I don't necessarily feel that, that the players have confidence in E.J. Manuel. And that's why you make the change. And that's why you try to bring in a veteran of Kyle Orton status, because you want him to go in there, get the calls right, get the checks right, run the right plays. When they throw a screen, if it's not open, he'll bury it. He won't throw an interception. When he has a shallow cross coming, he'll throw the ball out in front of the C.J. Spiller or a Sammy Watkins to let them run with the football. So I would imagine that the offensive players were grumbling to their coaches mm-hmm. that the ball is not where it's supposed to be when they are getting to where they are. So I think that's why Doug Marrone has done this, and I think it was a smart thing because E.J. Manuel obviously has regressed and is not ready yet to take the mantle.
Boomer Esiason joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. What are your surprises and disappointments at the quarter pole?
Right now, my number one center, Derek Stepan, broke his leg, so I'm very disappointed about that. Marty St. Louis is actually...
I'm beginning to detect the trend here.
Blackhawks. Yes, I think so. So I'm very disappointed about that as we head into the NHL start of the season. I would tell you that the Dallas Cowboys are a nice surprise. The Houston Texans are a nice surprise. The Bengals and Cardinals, certainly at undefeated 3-0 teams, a very nice surprise. Disappointments, pretty easy. The New Orleans Saints are very disappointing. The New England Patriots, the way they've played the last couple weeks offensively, very disappointing. But it's a long season, you know, and it's there are a lot of games yet to be played. The thing about the Saints, all three of their losses have come on the road. Mm-hmm. So I believe that they'll win all eight home games this year, and they'll win three or four games on the road, and they'll get to 11-5, maybe 12-4 even. So even though it's dark in New Orleans, I think that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. The question really for Dallas is, can they sustain on the back of DeMarco Murray, who's had injury problems throughout his career and is finally staying healthy and living up to his billing.
Boomer, it was good of you to join us today. Thanks so much.
All right. See you October 12th, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, Rangers and Leafs. Take care.
You got it.
That's Boomer Esiason of the NFL and CBS. He's also, of course, co-host of Boomer and Carton on WFAN Sports Radio, 66 a.m. in New York. By the way, that Toronto Rangers matchup, and in case you don't know, you probably figured out by now, Boomer Esiason's a pretty big Rangers fan. That Toronto-New York matchup will be our first Rogers hometown hockey presentation. The Ron McLean and the Rogers hometown hockey tour will be in London, Ontario. And they'll be hosting that game, which will be on City TV on October 12th. Toronto and the New York Rangers. Now, you know what? Maybe you'll get a camera shot of Boomer Esiason in there. Probably. I don't know if Boomer's working that day. I don't know if there's an NFL game that he'll be doing. But I've got to think Boomer will be at the game. So you may get a camera shot of Boomer Esiason when the Rangers and the Leafs play on October 12th. The first of our Rogers' hometown hockey tour. The tour will be in London on October 12th. And then on October 19th, they'll be in my neck of the woods, sort of. Selkirk, Manitoba, home of the Selkirk Steelers, home of the Selkirk Fisherman Junior B team. And that'll be for a Calgary and Winnipeg game, and that'll also be on City TV. I'm trying to throw out, a place that people should eat when they're in Selkirk, but I can't remember it. I don't know if Skinner's is still there or not. I have to check. You appreciate Boomer Esiason joining us. As I said, did he give you the rundown of NFL games? Just so you know. Of course, you saw the Thursday night game. Green Bay beating my Minnesota Vikings 42-10. No, I didn't. I watched a little bit with Christian Ponder. I don't even know how to begin to describe my feelings for Christian Ponder this morning. Anyhow, Chicago at Carolina, Cleveland at Tennessee, St. Louis at Philly, Atlanta at the Giants, Tampa Bay at New Orleans, Houston at Dallas, Buffalo at Detroit, Baltimore at Indy, Pittsburgh at Jacksonville, Arizona, Denver, Kansas City at San Francisco, the Jets against the Chargers, and then the Cincinnati Bengals, New England Patriots game. Monday night is Seattle at Washington, but that Bengals-Patriots game will be a little bit of fun. And you may, it may be sort of the passing of the torch in that game. And as I said, it's always difficult to bury a franchise like the New England Patriots. You know, there's always a tendency, I think, to give the New England Patriots the benefit of the doubt, to give any good team the benefit of the doubt. It's not just the Patriots, any team. It's one of the reasons that it took people 5 or 6 years to finally figure out that the New York Yankees were no longer the New York Yankees we used to think they were. It's just, it's almost a reflex action. So I'm really reluctant to say that, well, this is definitely the beginning of the end. But I think as Boomer Esiason pointed out, the scary thing is when you look at the Patriots and you look at their offense and you just see the total lack of support Tom Brady has. That may be the most shocking aspect of the Patriots. As Boomer pointed out, the running game is okay, but there's a total lack of support around Tom Brady. And you contrast that to the Cincinnati Bengals, and I love Boomer's line, that Tom Brady would absolutely love to have the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line. Absolutely love to be playing behind that group instead of the group he's behind right now. And I made the point that what's really telling, I guess, is that it doesn't appear as if Bill Belichick really has any answers. And I think a lot of it's on Bill Belichick, the general manager. You know, maybe that's a discussion that needs to be had in New England. And he has not drafted well in terms of offensive players in the past 5 years. He's taken three guys who've played any type of a role, one of them an offensive lineman. He has just not drafted well enough. There's somebody with the Boston Globe wrote the other day that they thought Bill Belichick, the general manager, was undermining Bill Belichick, the coach. And that might be the case. And it'd be an interesting discussion to have. At some point, if you're the New England Patriots, do you take a look at this thing and say, you know, we need to make some serious moves. We need to make some serious changes. Maybe we need another voice in there. And I don't know if that means just elevating Bill Belichick to general manager and bringing somebody else in to coach. I can't imagine you would take the general manager's title away from him. To me, that would look too much like a demotion. But clearly, I think we're on the verge of having that as a topic of conversation in New England. And that's something I don't think a lot of us thought we'd be seeing for a while. I don't know if you caught this news yesterday, but really got our attention. By the way, I love this. Mark Askin is producing the game, the Rangers-Leafs game, Rogers Hometown Hockey Tour, just sent me an email. I am producing. We'll get a shot of Boomer. So there you go, Boomer Esiason. Don't be picking your nose or anything when you're at the Leafs-Rangers game, because the cameras are going to be on you. It's part of our hometown hockey tour. The producer is going to be looking for Boomer Esiason. We're talking about a story that broke yesterday. Remember when cities used to line up to try to get the Olympics, and they'd be try to outspend each other and try to give goodies to all the IOC reps? And well, those days appear to have gone. I mean, I think you can blame Vladimir Putin and this year's Winter Olympics for it. But following a referendum in Oslo, the list of potential 2022 Olympic host cities is down to two, and Oslo ain't one of them. It's Beijing, China, and one of my favorite destinations, Almaty, Kazakhstan. I think they have a Marriott there. So that's it for your Winter Olympics, Beijing or Almaty, or Almaty. Anyhow, it's in Kazakhstan. Folks in Oslo, Norway decided, you know what? We don't really like the IOC. So that's a choice for the 2022 Winter Olympics. Scott Russell is host of CBC Sports Weekend. You can follow him on Twitter at Sports Weekend Scott. I'm going to ask him a question that is, well, it's been bothering me since this news came out. Should Calgary or Quebec City be angling to step in here for the 2022 games? You've got a choice between Beijing and Kazakhstan. Is there a chance? Is there a chance that a Canadian city steps in here for the 2022 Winter Olympics? Now think about Quebec City. You get an arena for an NHL team? Quebec City's kicked the tires in Olympic bids in the past. It'd be a perfect candidate. Of course, it's not going to cost me any of my money. I don't know how the taxpayers in Quebec City would feel about that. Scott Russell is host of CBC Sports Weekend, and we'll ask him, could the 2022 Winter Games be coming to Canada? All that ahead in the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.